Welcome to the Sharp 600, brought to you by Covers.com. I'm Rob Cressy, and I'm super excited to be jamming with you. And joining me to get you ready for NFL Week 1 is Elliot Crist, Chief Operating Officer at FTN Network. You can follow him on Twitter at Elliot Crist. Elliot, great to have you back on the show.
I'm pumped to be here. I'm pumped that football's back. I miss talking with you, and I'm excited about this, man. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, it feels so good to have football back in our lives, and it feels different this year because we're going to have people in stadiums. It's going to go back to, let's call it 2 years ago, when football was regular and how we're used to betting it. And I think that's an important thing for us to start with. I'm curious from your perspective, what changes or differences are you going to be making this year, whether it's your bets or your mindset on having fans in the stands and how that might affect totals or home versus away teams?
Yeah, I honestly don't know how much it really will impact. I think the crowd has a bigger impact on college games, right? It was crazy to watch that on Saturday. It was awesome to see, you know, arenas packed and everything. And, you know, there still will be COVID-related issues with players missing, right? Like Zach Thomas is missing the opening game. The Panthers starting tackle is missing the opening game. But in terms of, like, do I think it matters a little bit? Yeah, like, crowd noise absolutely plays a role. You know, third down situations, an extra penalty here. It definitely makes a difference. Probably worth, depending on the stadium, an extra half point. You know, last year maybe 2.5, 3 points. This year probably 3, 3.5. But I don't want to overcompensate for the crowd when I'm placing wagers.
So this is my third season hosting this podcast. And for those who are new to this, we like to do a few things. One, we want to help you be a more informed better. We also want to have fun at the same time because we know there's a lot of options for information for where you can go to get your sports betting content. And I like to try and be as pragmatic as possible about this because, one, we want to win, obviously. And what is the mindset that it takes? And I always figured the best thing that I can do is teach you how to fish because picks are going to win or lose. But understanding the mindset and the process that Elliot and myself go through every single week, that's what's going to help you the most. Every week, we've got a combination of analysts, bookmakers, and handicappers that are going to come on and give you a different viewpoint for how we're seeing the game. So just wanted to make sure we set the stage because it's going to be an absolutely amazing season. So Elliot, before we get into the games and the format that we're going to have, there's a few thoughts or nuggets that I've got going into this. And one of the things that I'm really looking forward to is going back to my fundamentals from a betting standpoint. So we were used to, let's call it a home field advantage of plus or minus 3 last year. And we sort of saw that dissipate and continue to go away to where there was almost no home field advantage. I'm looking to try and find value on home dogs and ugly bets, ones that make you feel gross and uncomfortable, because there's no such thing as free money, albeit there is once we start playing props and middles and all those things, but we're on a bet-to-bet basis. And there is two stats that I saw, and I got to give a shout out to ESPN for these, that I liked when doing research on NFL Week 1. Underdogs in division games in Week 1, 26-9-3 against the spread since 2013. In the second one, the average over-under for Week 1 currently sits at 47.6 points per game, which would be the highest average over-under for games since 1986. And the last thing on my mind, rookie quarterbacks, Trevor Lawrence, Zach Wilson, Mac Jones. We seem to fall in love with rookies very quickly in the preseason, but how does that unfold? Certainly on Week 1. And Elliot, I'm curious if you have any thoughts on any of those nuggets.
Yeah, another nugget that I've seen is that the team that wins the game has covered in Week 1, they're against the spread, they're 38-5-2 in the last three seasons. So the team that wins has really been covering a lot as well. And obviously, listen, if you're an underdog and you win, you're going to cover. That's just kind of how it works. But it also means that favorites are covering, you know, by a greater amount. And I think it's because books like us are learning a lot about these teams. So they're absolutely overvalued and undervalued teams. Oftentimes, they aren't getting how bad the worst teams in the NFL are. Like, the Lions, the Texans started 1-7 last year. The Jets started 1-7 against the spread. The Dolphins were 0-8 the year before. Everyone thought they were the worst team in football. So I'm keeping that in mind a little bit for the Texans and Lions in the opening week. Though I don't really want to bet on rookie quarterbacks, like you said. Hey, those trends really scream. The team that stands out to me most is the Miami Dolphins +3. You know, they were the best team against the spread in football last year. They're a team that creates they create a ton of turnovers this year. They get Jalen Phillips, the rookie, to help with that edge pressure as well. Just a top-to-bottom great roster, I think, and Tua could take a big step forward. I know people are going to say Bill Belichick against his former coaches. They split the series last year, and I would prefer not to lay 3 points against what I think is the lesser roster. So the Dolphins are a team that stand out to me with that trend you just talked about.
And Elliot, I think that's a great segue to our first segment, which is Get Comfortable Being Uncomfortable. And the purpose of this segment is for us to try and identify a bet that we don't exactly feel all warm and fuzzy about, but welcome to the world of sports betting. More oftentimes, I like to look for the ugly bets because everybody wants to be betting the overs and the sexy teams, but the value oftentimes is on the bets that don't make you feel all good. And you actually identified my Get Comfortable Being Uncomfortable bet. I'm taking the Dolphins +3. And why is it uncomfortable for me? Because number one, it's never fun to bet against the Patriots and Bill Belichick, certainly when the Patriots are at home. And I get it. Tom Brady era versus non-Tom Brady era, two different things. But we still have that Bill Belichick cachet where you don't roll up on Sunday being like, you know what I'm looking forward to doing? Betting against the Patriots. And there is still elements of uncertainty regarding Tua. I like to think that he is going to see some positive growth in year two, because we've seen that in quarterbacks previously. Lamar Jackson is a great example. So often it's very quick for us to say if a quarterback doesn't turn into Patrick Mahomes immediately that they're a bust. So Lamar Jackson, oh my God, is all he can do is run, and then boom, he becomes an MVP a year or two later. I'm not saying that's what Tua is going to be, but remember, he was coming off an injury when he got drafted, and everybody wanted to quickly write him off without him even getting a full year in the system. On the flip side, everybody's already crowning Mac Jones as the next Tom Brady in his first NFL game. So I'm certainly looking to say, all right, where is the market a little bit too high on some of these rookies? And we're very quick to create the narrative that we want for the Patriots because we've seen it before. And not all teams have that, but certainly the Patriots do. And I'm going to go back to the stat that I talked about at the beginning of the segment. Underdogs in division games in week one are 26-9-3 against the spread since 2013. You're telling me I get a non-rookie quarterback getting 3 points? Give me the Dolphins. And if I'm going to put this on an uncomfortable scale, I would put it around a 66 out of 100.
Yeah, I like that call a lot. That was actually the one I had written down too. I placed that wager a little while ago, and you made a ton of good points as to why. Another one for me is that I think the Dolphins actually have the better defense. You know, we don't talk about them as a great defense, but they, between Xavier Howard and Byron Jones, they probably have the best receiving tandem in football. Going up against Jakobi Meyers and Nelson Aguilar, I think that's a lot of pressure for a young quarterback in Mac Jones to make that first start. And your point on Tua is spot on. We live in a world where it's like, what did you do last week? And therefore you were good or bad. And Tua wasn't expected to play at all last year. And then they kind of pushed him in early. He didn't really have a playbook. They protected him. And their offense in general this year is far better, right? Like Will Fuller won't play in this game, but they'll get Jalen Waddle, who's an explosive playmaker they didn't have last year. Devontae Parker and Mike Gesicki are healthy. Their offensive line is better. Now, the area of this game that makes me most uncomfortable is the fact that the Patriots are going to have a major advantage with their offensive line versus the Dolphins front. Dolphins aren't a great run defense. Patriots probably have a top three run blocking line. They added Trent Brown back last year, and there's no Cam Newton, so they're not going to have the quarterback runs. And when you eliminate quarterback runs, their offensive line actually generated more yards before contact than any other team in football last year. I grabbed Damian Harris at 58.5 rushing yards. It's now up to 70. But that's what makes me uncomfortable about this. I don't like when the trenches are potentially at a disadvantage, but I do think that I'm getting the better quarterback. I think I'm getting, value at +3. And like you said, I think Vegas and odds makers have kind of disrespected Miami the last couple of years and not realized how much improved this team is, how deep this roster is, and it's why they were the best team against the spread last year in football.
So we're on the same page. Everybody likes Brian Flores, right? Like the narrative is, oh my God, this guy's the next amazing coach. Yet all of a sudden here comes this disrespect. We're like, yeah, but he's going up against Bill Belichick. So I do feel good in backing a Brian Flores led team, because one of the things that I'm going to be looking at, one, quarterbacks. Is there a rookie versus a non-rookie? Or number two, what is the coaching matchup? So of course it doesn't mean he's better than Belichick, but I'm not sitting here with Cliff Kingsbury, for example, where I don't feel as good. I've got a lot more confidence in Brian Flores.
Yeah, I'm with you 100%. It's typically I'm looking at the quarterback, I'm looking at the trenches, I'm looking at the coaching, and are there obvious matchups that a team can take advantage of, which will kind of sway the game one direction or another. And I think that the Patriots are going to struggle to throw the ball. I think that Flores is closer to Bill Belichick than we like to think. That does not mean that he's on the same level. Bill Belichick is still the greatest coach of all time. I'm not trying to say that, but this guy has proven since he's come to Miami that he has changed that franchise. He's turned him around. So I think he's a better coach than people give him credit for.
All right, the next segment we're going to have is the Big Mick Moneyline Parlay of the Week.
I see they got the Big Mac. I got the Big Mick.
And for those who are new, here's the backstory on this. When I first took over this podcast a few years ago from Joe Fortenbaugh, someone hit me up on Twitter and said, Rob, can you give me a winning bet this week? And of course, I wish I could just give out winners left and right. But I took it to heart what he said, and I was like, all right, you want a winning bet? What I'm going to do, and I put together a money line parlay. They got close to minus 110, which would be a regular bet right there, and it just so happens the bet won, and the guy responded back saying, thanks for the win, Rob. That was enough money for me to go and get a burger from McDonald's. And just like that, the light bulb went off in my head, and when he said McDonald's, it immediately made me think of the movie Coming to America. You have the Big Mac, we have the Big Mick. And just like that, the Big Mick Moneyline Parlay of the Week got created. And one of the things that I like and I think is important for sports bettors is to have different ways of thinking or chopping up the slate. So I'm not only going to do just spreads or totals. I like to do live betting. I like to do props. I like to do money lines. People like to do teasers. So how many different ways can we chop this up? And a win is a win. And as much as it may seem simple to create a money line parlay, we don't win every single time. We try and win more often than we can, but it doesn't happen all the time, because otherwise we would just be putting our mortgage on our money line parlays. So with that in mind, I really have two principles for how I think about building a money line parlay. Number one, ideally, I do not want a road team. Doesn't mean that I won't have road teams, but in the perfect scenario, I'd prefer to have a home team. And number two, ideally, I would prefer to not have a division game. Why? There's more familiarity between the teams, and you can oftentimes see either one of them win. So with that being said, I'm bringing a three-team moneyline parlay to the table that pays out plus 119 and give me the Rams, the Bucks, and the Chiefs moneyline. And I thought about the 49ers, except they're on the road, so it did not hit the first criteria of what I was looking for. And because of that, I left them off. And I find that oftentimes when building a money line parlay, one part is who do you want? And the next part is who are you going to leave off and how could you potentially lose? When it comes to the Rams, I can't exactly say that I'm all warm and fuzzy about the Bears this year. I trust McVay to win in an opening game against the Bears. Bucks, I like them the opening night. All they got to do is take care of business, trust in Tom Brady. And the last one, the Chiefs, I just believe that the Chiefs are going to not only win, but cover this game against the Browns. So I'm going with Rams, Bucks, Chiefs, Moneyline Parlay. What about you, Elliot? What's your Big Mick Moneyline Parlay of the Week?
Yeah, I actually think the one thing really interesting about the Moneyline Parlay, too, is that like when I originally looked at this, I did the 49ers and Rams money line parlay, and it was minus 167. But I was able to tease them down 6 points each and get them each at minus one, and it was minus 120. So I thought that was a great way to get value there. But to make it plus money, it would be 49ers, Rams, and Bucks. You know, and I think this one's going to be pretty popular. The Rams allowed 13.1 points per game at home last year. That's 5 points less than the next closest team, and they're taking on Andy Dalton. This is the first time Sean McVay's ever had like a legit quarterback in Matthew Stafford, and they finally get to open that stadium in Los Angeles with fans. I think that arena is going to be insane, and I don't think the Bears have what it takes to keep up with the Rams. I actually think that game could get ugly. Similar, Bucks and Cowboys. Bucks are going to dominate the line of scrimmage. They are going to take on one of the worst secondaries in football. They've got arguably the best trio of receivers in football with Antonio Brown, Chris Godwin, and Mike Evans. We saw them really ascend the second half of the year. Now they have a full offseason working together. I don't really see how the Cowboys stop them. Bucks don't have a weakness. They're now better this year than they were last year with Joe Tyron, too, in terms of getting after the quarterback. No Zach Martin. I think that game gets ugly. And the 49ers, like you said, the road aspect is honestly the only box that they don't check in this game. The Lions allowed more rushing touchdowns than any other team in football last year. And you're talking about a 49ers team that fell off last year because they weren't healthy. Now they're healthy. They should kind of blow this team off the line of scrimmage on both sides of the ball. Lions have no playmakers that you fear at all. I mean, a fifth-round pick is their top option, right? Amon-Ra St. Brown and Tyrell Williams and Quentin Cephas to try and beat. Like, that's a tough ask. And Sewell, a rookie tackle who didn't play football last year because he opted out of COVID, is now going to have to try to block Nick Bosa. And he really struggled this preseason. I think that's a recipe for a disaster. I also think Dan Campbell's going to be one of the worst head coaches. I really like Kyle Shanahan. So, yes, they're on the road. But I think this healthy 49ers team went to the Super Bowl 2 years ago. I think they're going to blow out the 49ers. And the Lions. And the fact that historically the worst teams in football just get obliterated on the spread to start the season. I like this as well. I actually, in terms of you want to get crazy with it, and this is not the this won't buy you McDonald's, but it might buy you like a porterhouse steak, doing a pleaser with some of these teams, you know, where you go the opposite direction and get crazy money, because I think there's a chance that all three of these games blow out.
Ooh, I like that. So that's one of the other things where you can actually buy points to have it more inflated. So let's say 49ers are at 7.5. You say, all right, let me move that up to 9.5. Or crap, you could say, let me start making all of those 10. And if you think they win by two touchdowns, all of a sudden that's a lot more enticing. And I think that would be an interesting thing for people to play around with is, hey, how well do you do when you buy points in the wrong direction in the event that the game gets out of hand against some of these lesser teams? I don't have any stats on that right now, but certainly I think, Elliot, you just opened my eyes to something new that I'm going to be tracking, and maybe we even create a new segment of, all right, who are we going to be buying points on to try and make the odds even more plentiful in our advantage?
Yeah, they typically wait on pleasers too because they know that some of their early lines are rough, so I haven't even actually been able to put that in, but I do want to sprinkle a little on that, maybe add in the Titans Cardinals over. And, you know, because I think that game is going to – the Cardinals are starting the two of us at corner this week against Julio Jones and A.J. Brown, and both those teams are going to be pace-up offenses. So my guess is something like that's going to pay out at 20 or 30 to 1 if you sell 6 points on both sides. The 49ers win by more than two touchdowns, Rams win by more than two touchdowns, and that game shoots out. So – it's obviously a very long shot bet, but when I feel real good about teams and see blowout potential, I think that's a fun way to try to, you know, you don't sprinkle your full size unit on that, right? That's like a small play, but it's those things can be real bankroll boosters.
One thing of note, I am also on the over in that Titans-Cardinals game. I think I've got that at 52. So, Elliot, you and I right now are very much aligned in the way that we're thinking. One thing that I always like to do is say, all right, where could this go wrong in these money line parlays? Which one of these teams, if they were to lose, would it happen? And we can sort of remove ourselves from this bet. But Elliot, I'm curious if there was a team outside of what we just talked about that were to win this week and going into week two, the narrative on them completely changes. So for example, if Pittsburgh were to beat Buffalo, all of a sudden everyone who says, hey, are the Steelers going to go 8-9 this year. Well, that narrative may not be as accepted if they beat Buffalo and says, whoa, Ben Roethlisberger's good. The offensive line was better than we thought. Najee Harris ran for 100 yards. We had multiple receivers with 100 yards where you go, oh, that's the narrative, because there's these teams where you can see either one of them. On the slate, I'm curious if there's a team where if they were to find a way to win the game, it might change our perception, even in this what have you done for me lately economy that we live in. And it doesn't mean, of course, that they're going to be amazing for the rest of the season, but that's how quickly we rush to judgment.
Yeah, I think we could be buying very high on the Carolina Panthers, but they're not an underdog, so it doesn't answer your question. I think they're going to score a fair amount of points against a horrendous Jets secondary. In terms of what fits what you just described, I think it's the Saints. I think the Steelers are another good one, but the Saints are 4-point underdogs. I actually got the Packers at plus 130 on the money line when there were some questions whether Aaron Rodgers would come back. But, you know, they obviously switched quarterbacks. There was a lot of talk about whether it be Taysom Hill or Jameis Winston. Drew Brees is retired. There's no Michael Thomas. This team is running out. Tre'Quan Smith and Marquez Callaway and Deontay Harris at receiver with Juwan Johnson at tight end. And everyone listening to this podcast is like, who are those people? And that's my point, right? You go from a Saints team that was built around Michael Thomas and Drew Brees, and that's what we just knew as success, to now being a 4-point home underdog, where Brees wasn't necessarily great the last year anyway. And Winston, you know, LASIK eye surgery, can he finally decide which team to throw to? There, I think if they came out and made a statement, it could be – we could really change the narrative. I saw today Darren Rovell tweeted out that the Saints were the most bet on team to miss the playoffs. I think people are going to start doing a double take if they win that game.
Yeah, and I think on my end, and this is by no means a vote of support, but if Philadelphia were to win on the road against Atlanta, you're hearing a lot of people say, you know what, I really like Atlanta this year. And I'm always gun shy on Atlanta, because anybody who's ever bet them over the last few years knows how much of a roller coaster they are, where you feel good about this game and all of a sudden they just completely lay an egg and you're like, oh my God, what just happened? And right now the narrative on the Eagles is Jalen Hurts our quarterback? This team is going to be one of the worst in the division, and I'm not hearing a lot of love for them. So from a perception standpoint, if Philly were to get this win on the road, I think it would at least get us thinking a little bit differently. Certainly if Jalen Hurts found a way to be spectacular or lead a fourth quarter comeback.
Yeah, honestly, that game has some bad prop lines. And I agree with you. I think the Giants fall in that same category in the NFC East, where if they came out and beat a Denver team that people are now high on, they're 2.5-point underdogs, that people are going to be like, oh, maybe Dave Gettleman and Jason Garrett aren't the worst people ever. Not that I think they're great at their jobs, but I think people give the Giants a lot of crap. You know, Jalen Hurts' passing prop came out at 225. Which seems very low. In two or three starts last year, he threw for over 300 yards. I understand that he started a fourth game, but the Eagles benched him very early because they weren't going to make the playoffs and were trying to tank for a better draft pick. Like Kyle Pitts, everybody, who doesn't love Kyle Pitts? I feel like, you know, most people's moms is their favorite person on like planet Earth. Like moms are like, oh, that's my boy, I'm so proud of him. But Twitter is taking over and they are more proud of Kyle Pitts than his mom is at this point. His prop number came out at 40. Devontae Smith came out at 43.5. I think those are very low lines for a game that should shoot out. I think that game is going to be fun between two teams that aren't great, but some good football players and some good football plays.
I'm curious your thoughts on Kyle Pitt, because certainly in the fantasy community, everybody is in love with him, but there's also the narrative that first-year tight ends, and oftentimes first- and second-year tight ends, don't exactly break out until year three, and the expectations for Kyle Pitts are through the roof. And we also haven't seen a tight end drafted this high, and I sort of see all sides of it. Here's a guy who's unlike anything we've seen before, except we did see Vernon Davis ways ago, where you're like, whoa, look at this athletic freak. And I'm curious on your expectations for Kyle Pitts, and certainly as it relates to the prop market, because we see an offense that's going to be throwing a ton. We see how much of a physical force that he can be. But I also just, I look at history and know that it takes some time for tight ends to develop into who they need to be.
Yeah, I mean, TJ Hockenson was a top 10 pick. I understand top 5 versus top 10 is different. OJ Howard was up there in terms of just absolute freak score. I think what helps Kyle Pitts is that he's more of a receiver than he is a pure tight end, which we saw with Evan Engram, because his prop line originally came out at 874.5. And I think in NFL history, only three tight ends, might only be two, have ever gone over that number. Like, it is the hardest position to transfer from college to the NFL, I think, because you're just asked to do so many things. Now, I think they're going to play him a lot as like a big slot and kind of work the football in with him. And, you know, Matt Ryan throws 40 plus times a game, and Calvin Ridley can only catch so many passes. So I think he's going to have a good year. I think he's going to disappoint people who think I see out there, like, he's going to break Justin Jefferson's record, or he's going for 1,300 yards and 10 touchdowns. Like, he's probably not, right? But I think he's going to be a solid weekly contributor. I think he's going to disappoint in fantasy. But at the same time, 40 yards for me, I mean, I have him, I thought he was going to be lined at 50, which is right around where we have him projected. So I think there's real value in his player prop in week one. I think the betting market is low on him with props, but I think the fantasy community is too high. Or basically, if you look at his median projection, we are just all so far over it.
Yeah, Kyle Pitts was nowhere on my draft radar. I got a lot more TJ Hawkinson because I like the breakout potential. And certainly, as you talked about, in an offense where there is virtually no wide receivers, like, you can't even name who they are in Detroit. So moving on to the next segment called Pick a Loser.
Oh, what a loser!
And the purpose of this segment is to think differently, where we want to identify a losing bet. And the reason for this is because we always want to pick winners, but can you identify a bet that is not going to win? And of this entire slate, the very first game that stood out to me of all of them, and this makes me sick that I'm about to say this, it was the Jags versus the Texans. And I looked, and the Jaguars were laying 3 on the road, and I was like, wait a second. You're telling me a rookie quarterback with a first-time NFL head coach is laying 3? By principle, I do not care who they are playing against. The next game, my pick a loser is the Jags -3 from a foundation standpoint. And Elliot, I've actually got a question for you because I didn't know this before I looked it up. Can you tell me who in the world the Texans head coach is?
Cully, right, from the Ravens.
Well, yeah, I had no idea. I had to look and see that he came from Andy Reid's tree and was from Baltimore. So kudos to you for actually knowing that. What actually makes me feel good about this bet is Tyrod Taylor. Tyrod Taylor is a veteran that, if we remember last year, he was supposed to be the starter in San Diego, or I guess for the Chargers, before their medical team had a mishap, and boom, here goes Justin Herbert's trajectory. So I feel better getting 3 points with Tyrod Taylor. And while the Texans don't have sexy players on them, they've got a bunch of Mark Ingrams and Philip Lindsay's and David Johnson's. I'm not writing home to tell anybody about that. But when look at what's on the other side with the Jags, a team that only had one victory last year, there is no way I am laying 3 points with the Jags. So the Jags are my pick a loser of the week. What about you?
Yeah, I like that a lot. I've written up the Texans as one of the better, like, pool pick'ems, like, against the spread, because I think everyone's going to pick the Jaguars, forgetting, yes, their quarterback play is much improved. They did go 1-15 last year. The Texans are the worst team in football, but laying 3 on the road, that just feels gross. Like, I think the Texans are the right set. I won't bet on that game, but I think you're pick or loser. I like where you're going with it. For me, I'm going to go with the Jets. You know, I they are a much improved team. There's no more Robert Saleh. Again, fading a rookie quarterback. I think the Panthers are going to surprise some people. I think they're going to give the Jets secondary a ton of problems. The Jets just lost Carl Lawson, who was their marquee offseason addition on the defense, who finally was supposed to replace basically be their first real edge rusher since John Abraham. His backup, Vinnie Curry, is also out for the season. They traded for Shaq Lawson because they have no ability to get pressure on the edge. So you can't get pressure on the edge, and you can't cover anybody. Their number one corner was just cut and bless on Austin. They don't have a single guy on the roster who is greater than a fifth round pick. And they're covering DJ Moore, Robbie Anderson, and Terrace Marshall. So I think the Panthers are going to have some major advantages against them on offense. And I think they're going to end up winning potentially by double digits. So my pick or loser will be the New York Jets this week.
And Elliot, it is worth noting that you are a Jets fan, correct?
I am a Jets fan, and I think that they're going to be more fun this year. But rookie quarterback going up against a defense that prides itself on takeaways with an offense on the other side that has major advantages everywhere they go. Plus, they get Christian McCaffrey back. I just think that's a lot to ask for the Jets to cover.
What are your thoughts on Zach Wilson? I mean, with you following the team so much, I think I would value your opinion more than most.
Yeah, listen, I wish they took Justin Fields, but it was pretty obviously who they were going to take from the jump. And he looked great against the Packers in preseason. There's not a lot of throws he can't make. I think there's going to be some growing pains going from BYU to the NFL, where he even said it a lot in practice, like, I'm making a lot of these throws, learning that I can't make them at this level because guys close too quickly. And that's going to, you know, play itself out in games. I think he's going to look phenomenal at times, and I think he's going to make some bonehead plays, which is kind of basically being a top-end rookie quarterback, right? So I liked his odds at 10-1 to win Rookie of the Year, because I think if they can win 7 or 8 games, he's got a shot to do that, you know, because rookie quarterbacks tend to win that award. And 10-1, I think he's now down to 7-1 or 7.5-1 now, depending on where you look. I think the Jets will get better as the season goes on. I think that they don't match up well with the Carolina Panthers.
Yeah, in Carolina, what I like so much about their team is Matt Rhule and the culture that he's built, that even last year we saw them exceed expectations. And I haven't laid any action on this game yet. I would lean towards Carolina just because I believe in what they're building there. But I think a lot of it does determine on, hey, what's going to go on with Sam Darnold? Is the Jets version the real version, or being put in a different system with a lot more offensive talent around him, is that the thing that unlocks him? Because remember, I believe he's only 23 years old, which is virtually nothing. Probably at that point, Aaron Rodgers hadn't even started a game yet. So there's still plenty of time for development. So Elliot, as we wrap this up, are there any other games or nuggets of info that you like or that you want to share?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's an amazing slate. I think one of the biggest things right now is to be on top of player props as they release. And, you know, about 15 minutes before the show, we just got 2 new games. I'm guessing, you know, Wednesday, Thursday, they're all out by kickoff tomorrow. They are moving quickly because the books are putting out bad lines. I mean, Deontay Johnson opened it up at 52. He's at 60. Damian Harris opened up at 58. He's at 70. Antonio Brown opened up at 44. He's at 60. Tom Brady opened up at like 285. He's now at as high as 310. And now people love to bet prop overs, right? So those lines tend to go up. They say when you want to bet player props, bet the over early, the unders late. But it's important to understand the books also – quite frankly, you know, especially if you're a fantasy player, like, you've done so much research on these guys, you have a really good sense of their roles. Like, I'll give you a play that I really like. Antonio Gibson over 12.5 carries. There is no one that's taking him off the field on first and second downs. They are a home favorite. It's, you know, we have him projected at 15. I'm not even saying he's going to be efficient. I'm just going to say he's going to get the ball. And we saw all preseason, basically, whenever he's on the field, he gets the ball. Keenan Allen's player prop line for receptions is 5.5. You could not find him for under 6.5 last year ever. Like, Justin Herbert's there. He's locked into 8+ targets. He averaged over 11 with Justin Herbert when he didn't leave a game in the first quarter. So, like, those are two lines where the books have not adjusted to their roles this year and to their volume. And I can just bet straight on their volume. So I'm willing to take some of that stuff. I'm willing to take guys that are whose numbers are too low early. And then Sunday, I'm going to look for some guys late where the market's kind of inflated them.
I love the way that you think about this. And so we understand, when do you start looking for the prop line so that we can start building our own process?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think they're going to come out a little bit earlier this year than they did last year. There was so much COVID related news last year that the books kind of waited till Friday. I think they're going to start coming out Wednesday, Thursday this week. I always try to check, like, honestly, every hour starting Wednesday morning, because the lines are absurd. I mean, I grabbed Calvin Ridley at 77 receiving yards, and 15 minutes later, he was at 85. Like, they move quickly, and numbers can dissipate, but that's a great opportunity. And then you also open up middling opportunities, and they always say that a great way to determine whether or not you're plus EV better, right, is are you beating the closing line? So early in the week is great. And as you get information, if you can react to that information quicker than the book, do it. I think the biggest mistake people make is they bet on, especially new gamblers, and this is like just a human mentality. They bet on something because of something, as if the books don't know that. When they'll say like, I'm betting on the Bucks because I'm betting on Tom Brady. That's great, but they're aware that Tom Brady is there. Like if you're saying that, well, Tom Brady's only valued at 6 points and I have him at 9, that makes a lot of sense to me. But if you're just saying, well, the Bucks have Tom Brady, so I'm betting on the Bucks, it's like, this isn't breaking information, right? So understanding what bits of information you feel are edges that the books have yet to react to, as opposed to overvaluing something that they already know.
Elliot, I love the way that you break that down. I love your mindset around both fantasy, sports betting, and certainly props. Where can everybody connect with you?
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at Elliot Crist, 1L, 1T, no H in Crist. And all my betting work can be found on ftnbets.com. Picks behind a paywall, but we've got modeling, we've got projections, we've got all kinds of different tools that come with it as well. And then all the content is free. So anytime I write up a pick or anything like that, same game parlays, I mean, I've been doing a lot of that stuff this year too, which is correlated, which is a great way to do that kind of stuff. So head to ftnbets.com.
And with the Sharp 600, we are a community-driven podcast. And what I mean by this is I get down like you get down. So this weekend, both Elliot and myself, we're going to be playing fantasy. We're going to be betting on sports. We're going to be locked into Red Zone, multiple TVs, Twitter, so much going on. So when you've got action, let us know about it, because we like to be part of this sports betting community and support each other. And I want to hear from you. Do you have a pick a loser, a Big Mick Moneyline Parlay of the Week, or a get comfortable being uncomfortable bet? You can hit me up on Twitter at Rob Cressy. I'm also on Instagram. And remember, if you want to be a sharp, don't be a square with your bankroll. Be disciplined with your money. The funkadelic devil hits you with the rap level of 10. The 1, 2, 3, your pen. I get action. So everybody jump with your rump. If you like the way the sound pump, pump it in your back trunk. And let loose with the juice when I do rock. I'm too hot. Some say I got more juice than Tupac.